I think you're going to see the Ethereum community start to rally. And if that's the way Lido wants to play it, of telling people that it's like they're good for Ethereum by them controlling stuff, like it's going to, my take is, not end well for them. But if self-limited, and that would be okay for them if they'd self-limited, they have decided that they're going to try to justify insane valuations by trying to control Ethereum governance. And I don't think that's going to work. It might be quite counterproductive to the value of their governance token. Howdy, y'all. Welcome to another episode of Web3 Builders. I'm Evan. Will's over there. We are excited to bring you another episode, and we have a bunch of stuff to talk about. I think the number one thing we have going on is we just released a show, and I thought it was a cracker of an episode. What's your reaction to it, Will?
Yeah, we had Amin Soleimani to discuss the Tornado Cash situation. And Amin definitely has a different purview than a lot of people on this topic, given that he's built things like Spank Chain and Moloch DAO, which themselves are a little bit different than a lot of other applications people are building on top of Ethereum. I appreciate his opinion on it. I don't think it was a lot different than a lot of other people's takes on dev building in Ethereum and then taking Tornado Cash. So I'll leave that there. The one take I did see on Twitter that I wanted to raise, and we did not raise on that podcast, is some people in the cryptocurrency circles writ large were talking about how the TORN token and the profit incentive built in Tornado Cash was against both Roman Semenov and Roman Storm's position. So it's in favor of the prosecution. And I wanted to get your take on that since we didn't talk about it during the episode.
When I read the indictment, I thought it was just pure nonsense. It was one of those things that they threw on there to prejudice people against them, as in, oh, like they have to make it sound like if they're money laundering, right? If they're the actual three counts that the government threw against them were all conspiracies for money laundering, which, if you know anything about criminal law, that's basically these catch-all things for, you don't really actually violate any laws, so we're just going to throw these conspiracy things at you. And the history of them is basically we put these things in there to go after the mafia, because like there was no other like way that the government could go after them. And they sort of go against, you know, I went to law school, so I took crim law once upon a time. They go against one of the most elements, principles of criminal law, which is the government is not supposed to be able to put you in jail or bring charges against you unless they can say you explicitly violated this thing, right? And this goes back to England and blah, 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 right? And like we've slowly chipped away against this and like against a lot of the things that the Constitution says as well. But and these conspiracy laws are one of them. But in order for them to say like, oh, well, there's a conspiracy for money laundering, they sort of have to say like, oh, well, and they did it to make money, right? Because otherwise it just doesn't make any sense. And so the whole, they did it to make money. The only thing, you know, I could go back, but the only thing I remember seeing when I read the indictment was, well, they have a token. Like you could boil the entire section, have a token, which is, you know, again, I don't know. I hate to like keep repeating the term, but I don't know. Like it is the perfect term. It's just pure gaslighting. It is something that they threw on there because they needed to make it seem like they had a profit motive. And I'm not in like entirely saying that like the Romans, like any of the Tornado Cash like founders did not like want to make money with this. Like, I mean, they're developers and like, you know, their time is valuable and, you know, they're capitalists. Like I'm not saying that they like don't want to make money, but the whole, like they were profit motive for the money laundering. That's just like, I mean, I don't know. The prosecutors know better, just like the whole thing. The prosecutors know better. They just don't care.
Yeah, I mean, I think after this indictment, there's a solid argument that they maybe don't know better because some of the stuff in there made no sense. One point in your favor, I guess, we're just kind of talking about a little bit more here. Just because you made a privacy application, you want to get paid for it, doesn't mean like you're a bad guy. And that's what it seems to be boiling down to, right? Like they added a token, they built a privacy application, and it's somewhat how they're funding itself. And they also added some things in there to make it that you could look at the deposit history and see if it came from an illicit source and see where the, see if the source was like a good deposit or not. And that seemed to be completely overlooked. That being said, some people are looking at this online and being like, hey, there's a token involved with this. We have this opinion about it. But that was my only take. Unless you have any more thoughts on this, let's zoom over to DC, which was today's news. Do you want to intro us with that?
Yeah, I mean, we found out today. Well, so one thing that somebody pinged me is they said at some point in the episode with Amin, I said, it's pretty obvious that this is coming from the White House. And I don't know, it's pretty obvious if you're paying attention that this is coming from the White House. But there's no, like, it's not like the Biden administration has put out this, like, directive. Like, they sort of have in some ways, by the way. But it's not like they've said, like, we're, like, going after and we're, like, going to do this. But it's pretty clear that there is some high-level staffer that has decided that this is a policy objective. And they are, you know, directing certain administrative agencies to do all this stuff. You know, today's thing was they had the tax regulations came down, which basically just like define everything in such a way that no United States person can ever use a blockchain ever again without, like, because it'll require KYC on every party to never in order to do a transaction. And it's, you know, I think Bitcoiners probably don't realize that it, like, goes against them too, or maybe they do. But, you know, do you want to give some of the background on how this came to be?
Yeah, so just more specifically here, looking at the documentation, this came out of the Treasury and the IRS today, and I was flying and I landed to this news and just saw a bunch of tweets from people saying, oh, don't build in the U.S. anymore, and I wasn't quite sure why that was. I guess people have been saying that for a while, so I just didn't really take it as anything meaningful. But looking at the information now, we're looking at this Bloomberg piece we'll put in today's show notes. Basically, new Treasury proposal that is not finalized by any means yet. But this follows up on last year where there was a similar proposal to implement KYC on top of a lot of different parties within, say, your, like, blockchain ecosystem of sorts. We think your wallet providers, your exchanges of the world, your stakers, your miners, if you have those. They basically want all the information on it so that they can get the correct tax amount from all the participants in a given ecosystem. So, of course, that's, like, the rationale for it, right? Like, we want the tax money. But on top of this, you're creating a huge honeypot with all this KYC information. Last year, when this came out, it was basically greeted with applause on both sides of the Senate and Congress. But eventually it was stopped due to one provision, which was the fact that it's very difficult to perform KYC on Bitcoin miners or Ethereum stakers. It's pretty hard to do that. And so that was stripped out. And that seems to be also taken out in this instance. There's a few different people who are plotting that note, including Patrick McHenry, the chairman of the U.S. of the House Committee for the Treasury, saying that that was a good move, but he did not like the rest of the proposal. And then crypto Twitter's favorite, Elizabeth Warren, was saying that this whole bill moving forward now is actually not strong enough. And then she wants a little bit more of a beefy new rule change for the IRS and the Treasury.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the big one that, you know, crypto protested against and shut down the congressional switchboard because there was the deluge of outpouring. And then they pulled one of these things. But, you know, I really disagreed at the time because, like, basically the crypto policy people in DC said, oh, like, this is the best deal we're going to get. We should just take it and try to work on it and the Treasury. And then, like, when there's a comment period, which is actually what starts today, basically, when they announce this proposed regulation. I just disagreed because, like, if you know anything about politics, right, like, the classic case of, like, we just want to get what we want. Is like, and we want to defer all your anger because we know it's unlikely that you'll be able to get this amount of anger over again, is like, we just, you know, we defer it to the next thing. And so they came and they told them, like, oh, don't worry, like, we won't screw you, we're gonna pass this bill with some ambiguous things in there, but, like, don't worry, it won't be that bad when the regulations come down. And basically the crypto people fell for it, and now we are here.
Yeah, we're back.
Like, it was crazy because, like, we really had that moment and they really should have capitalized on it and they didn't. And it, like, I, I tweet about this sometimes, but unfortunately nobody ever listens to me, partly because all I'm doing is whining on the Bird app. But you know, crypto needs better people in DC. Like, it's been obvious to me for a long time.
I don't have much of a hot take on the DC stuff because I purposely don't like wading into that world, and just imagine that most lobbyist work is going to be terrible. But I definitely agree with you. I remember that happening last year. I don't remember which month it was, but yeah, we blew up the hotline. Like, everyone was submitting information, calling different representatives, trying to get it shut down. And I think the KYC thing for Bitcoin miners and for stakers was like a big part of that. And like, thankfully, from what I'm reading now, that's not going to be a part of this proposal. But that doesn't mean that anyone else in the ecosystem is not going to have problems, right? Like, if you have to do KYC for like normal transfers of assets, or just for like using exchange, something like that, that's pretty onerous and that's pretty difficult on the industry. I mean, it's a lot of tax compliance at a time when a lot of people are struggling just to like pay their developer bills. So that's pretty net negative.
The takeaway here is that the Biden administration is trying to kill crypto in the United States. Like, if you don't realize that, like, you're probably a partisan who doesn't want to admit it. Like, it's not really something that is really like arguable at this point. But you know, we do have 60 days, I believe it is, to make comments. So you can go and make comments, and you know, you can have your say. And I mean, there is evidence that like regulators do read these things. They don't always care, but they do at least like read them. And like, I think they even by law have to respond to some of them and categorize them. It's been a while since I've looked at that stuff, but that might be true. Anyway, yeah, it's a bad day. It's tough when the White House has decided that they are going after the industry that you work in and wants it to go offshore.
Yeah,
no, that's the life we have.
Some more info here for people who are interested. The IRS is saying there's a $500 billion hole in taxes owed and collected from the cryptocurrency industry, which I'd love to see some information about that, because that's like half of crypto's market cap.
Source, we made it up. Like, if they knew that that was true, they would just go and collect it. Like, they're just like making it up.
Bitcoin's market cap. Let's look at that right now. Bitcoin's market cap is $515 billion as of recording. And they're saying there's a $500 billion hole in collections. Maybe over its history, but that's some speculative way of doing some accounting. So there's that part of it. And then again, Patrick McHenry saying exactly what you're saying in his statement afterwards, saying, quote, the Biden administration must end its effort to kill the digital asset ecosystem in the U.S. and work with Congress to finally deliver clear rules of the road for this industry. And just for a note there, there was like three bills moving through Congress this summer. Like, there was a DeFi bill, there was a stablecoin bill, and there's one other that I'm blanking on as of right now, but all those bills were like moving through fairly progressively, and the stablecoin one a lot of people were enthusiastic about. I think that's what got the movement with the PayPal stablecoin, right, where the stablecoin bill was moving through both the House and the Senate subcommittees, and they were going to be voted on, and people are getting pretty enthusiastic about those things. And then we turn around and there's like, you know, an executive branch comes in with a new proposal change and can lop off the head of the industry in the U.S. So yeah, it might take a different administration, which I don't think. This is the kind of the weird part, Evan. I want to get your opinion on it. The cryptocurrency industry is broken down. Of course, there's like political sides in both parts. A lot of people, like even Vitalik, I think when we talked with him a few days ago, spoke about how the Ethereum camp leans a little bit more leftist, a little bit more liberal, and then the Bitcoin side leads a little bit more Republican. How do people vote come 2024 if they're looking at these things and they work in the crypto industry?
Honestly, not much of an opinion here. I don't think crypto should be a partisan issue. Actually, one fun fact is Week in Ethereum News, the most clicked thing in the entire issue last week. So the week of August, whatever, 17th, 2023, was the left-wing argument for crypto, which was published in Fortune magazine. Which they basically say, like, look, like, for years we said that we wanted to take on big tech and we don't like big business, and Web3 is our best chance to take on the network effects of big tech. Like, why is Biden going after it? And I think that's a really good argument. I don't think there shouldn't be any like partisan or whatever like tinge to this, it should, I mean, like it's also not really arguable that Biden's going after it and that Republicans right now are better on the issue, but some of that is just because Biden is going after that, after it, right? Like, there's always a partisan, you know, knee-jerk reaction, reflexiveness to all this stuff in the United States. I don't know. I don't like, you know, if you're a single party or if you're a single issue voter, like it's obviously clear how you vote now, like at least in like the general election. In the primaries, it's not as clear. Coinbase does have a site to help you decide who is bad and who is good. So I would say, you know, everybody needs to check that out, and we will make, you know, a bigger deal of that going into the election. And I hope that they have good people leading that. You know, as you know, Will, like Will says he tries to stay out of politics, but Will used to be a political reporter. So he,
a brief stunt.
He's gaslighting us like the government is gaslighting us when he says he wants to stay out of it.
I realized I hated it, so I got out of it.
Yeah,
no, I mean, this is a dev show, right? So, but the weird thing is, like, the development that the probably the listener of this show would care about is now political because of what's happening with these rule changes.
Politics, you know, you cannot care about politics, but in the end, politics makes you. Politics cares about you, and it makes you care about it, right? So.
That's the tax man reality
of life. Let's switch up to, you know, we mostly talk about Ethereum on this show, but I think there was like the mythical beast happened this week, which is there was a development in Bitcoin.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about Drive Chains. This week, Drive Chains, which is a proposal going back to 2015, isn't that crazy, right when Ethereum was launching, 2015, to add blind merge mining to Bitcoin and essentially sidechains of Bitcoin, received a little more attention after Luke Dasher or Luke Dash Jr., depending on how you want to pronounce it. I've heard it a billion different ways. He is the longest contributor to Bitcoin. And he wrote some code on behalf of Layer 2 Labs, which is the startup behind Drive Chains, Paul Stork's old blind merge mining baby. So what did this mean? Well, a lot of people looked at Drive Chains over the last few years and said, like, this isn't going to work for numerous reasons, including Bitcoin having MEV, centralization issues with mining, increase in the costs of a full node or running a full node. So people have sort of dismissed it, but Drive Chains is kind of having like a thing this year, and they're pushing really hard. Paul Stork again like raised money for Layer 2 Labs to push forward for Drive Chains. And then this week he received a ton of attention. The whole project received a ton of attention because Luke Dasher is involved. And why would Luke Dasher ever get involved with something like this? Like, everyone thinks he's a Bitcoin maxi. And all of a sudden we have people like Evan who would never look at the big orange meme coin be maybe like slightly interested that there's a like heartbeat of sorts in Bitcoin development again.
Well, Luke used to be against it, right?
So Luke's history is kind of all over the place in regards to some of these things. In this instance, I believe he was against it in the past, and as of now, he's quote unquote neutral, and he was paid to write some code and review some code by Layer 2 Labs about the consensus of the proposed change with blind merge mining. So we don't necessarily know if Luke is pro or not, but the fact that he did write some code on something that's like so out there and a lot of people are against does mean something. And at the same time, people like Adam Back, the CEO of Blockstream, also is now pro, or at least slightly pro.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't realize that. Wow.
Yeah, so we might have some like development in Bitcoin here. At the very least, we'll have like some arguments again. Now, the one thing I do want to like note about Luke Dasher is like he did write code for both sides during the block size war, right? Like he was willing to do that. Didn't mean he agreed with it, but he did write some code. I think that just kind of comes down to the fact that he's a developer. He wanted to get paid for this. This was a project. I mean, there's not always a lot of money coming in the door for Bitcoin developers. Like it's pretty it's like getting a PhD and then you have to live off like McDonald's wages out there. So I think that may be something to do with it. But yeah, it was kind of cool to see like people on Bitcoin Twitter and crypto Twitter talking about Bitcoin again, Bitcoin development. You know, you don't see that. Last time was probably 2021 with the Taproot update.
I would say I'm in favor of drive chains. It's been a while since I read into it, so I am kind of fuzzy on the details. You know, literally, it's probably like 6 years now. I had a positive impression. It seemed like something that Bitcoin should do to me. I'm surprised it's taken this long for them to anything at all. Well, I
don't
know.
You're surprised. You're not surprised.
I am. I mean, I am surprised that, like, you know, there is, like, Luke Dash Jr. did have a pretty negative tweet out there about it.
Is that how you say it? Luke Dash Jr.?
I don't know.
Your preference?
I've always heard Luke Dash Jr., but
okay. I've heard it both ways.
You know, look, the fact that he was, you know, I didn't know, like, is what you just told me, that he had done code for both sides in the block size wars. He has had a couple of tweets which were, you know, I think he said that it was a big deal for Bit, which I think is fair, but it sort of does sound, you know, at least slightly positive. I don't know. I'm very fascinated to see if something happens, if Adam has come out in favor of it. That's very interesting to me. It seems like miners should be in favor of it because they get more money, right? So
yeah, I think miners are actually going to be looking at this. So there's a few larger miners out there that would be interested in it. Marathon Digital is one that has expressed interest in looking at sidechains and things of that nature. And there's not a single miner that I'd speak to that isn't concerned about the quote unquote security budget, which basically just means transaction fees for Bitcoin. And Ethereum obviously kind of took care of that whole problem with EIP 1559 and just like its general changes to consensus and the way that's changed its tokenomics over the years, like multiple times. Bitcoin hasn't done that. And there's a lot of people who think that it's fine, that Bitcoin will be okay over time. And then there's this other camp that does not think it's okay. The interesting thing about BIP 300 and BIP 301, which is the improvement proposals for drive chains, is like you can have a few different arguments for why to implement them. You can come from it from a security budget standpoint, but you can also take it from the standpoint that, you know, maybe we just want Bitcoin to be like this black hole for liquidity and people should be able to build on top of Bitcoin and not build on top of other chains. So I guess the idea is like almost taking the feet out from under Ethereum. If that's going to work or not, whole other question, but I think that's one way that they're sort of marketing it. And then also just fulfilling the sidechain promise, which was like the original reason for Blockstream being a company. And they got as far to creating Liquid, which is a federated sidechain with a huge multi-sig. And then they just ended there. And there's been nothing since 2015. So I think like there's a lot of reasons to market for this, for drive chains, if it moves forward. I'm neutral right now. Like I think drive chains is really interesting. I'm just for more discussion of like what Bitcoin could change towards. That's my take on it.
Yeah, cool. Bullish. I mean, bullish stuff is happening, I guess is the way I would say. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, you might buy some Bitcoin again, maybe.
I probably won't, but I do think it's good for Bitcoin, which I don't know, maybe that's a negative signal to Bitcoiners.
Evan said it's good. Okay, I want to move over and talk about this Coinbase optimism thing. I'll do a quick intro on it and hand it over to you. So Coinbase and Optimism came to an agreement this week to basically hand cash back over to each other in different ways. Coinbase, of course, launched the Base L2 layer a few weeks ago. They opened it up in July for developers and then went public in August. So they're one of the first exchanges to have its own L2, which is pretty great. And they're using the OP stack to be able to do it. So then this week, the OP Collective, which built the OP stack, agreed to give them 118 million tokens, which is about 2.5% of the total supply of OP tokens out there, which is over 4 billion tokens, in exchange for 15% of future sequencer revenues minus Ethereum costs. For like settling down to the main chain. So basically sort of like handing over tokens for future revenue and then cementing like a partnership into the future for working with each other. The OP team is really ecstatic that Coinbase, the largest exchange in the US, is building on OP stack. And then Coinbase, of course, is probably not going to walk away from free tokens and the ability to use them for governance in the OP collective. I thought this was interesting for a few reasons. The most important one being, of course, that Coinbase is actively pursuing this in the midst of an SEC investigation. That's always sort of the backdrop for me. You might have a different opinion on why this is important and also some other facts I might have left out there.
No, I think you got it right. I mean, they pledged some money to retroactive public goods funding, and from the which comes from the sequencing, and in return they got 2.75% of the tokens. I look, my take, which and a lot of people that I talked to, they said, wait, what? Optimism gave Coinbase money to fork their software, you know, because historically, right, like goes back to what we were talking about, I think, in one of our earlier episodes, which is there's generational wealth on the line. And people say, like, yeah, like, it's open source, but, you know, oh, no, you used our software. Like, this case is the opposite of that. They're saying, hey, we'll pay you to use our software, which is simply, you know, licensed, you know. Does everybody else want their software to be forked too? Like, can I go fork somebody's chain and build on it? Now, I think Coinbase is Coinbase, so they're a unique player. They have a bunch of engineers who are working on the Optimism stack. So, you know, there is a cash investment on their side. They do expect to make money on the sequencer. So it is an investment, a business investment on their for Coinbase as well. But yeah, it's to me, that's just the underlying thing, is people were out there saying, wait, like, all of a sudden people want to be forked to the extent that they'll pay for it.
Should we fork and get some tokens? I think we should consider it.
We should, yeah. Who do you want to fork?
We fork the OP stack. I don't know. Yeah. Last thought on it is just about like the token allocation. So looking at it, they gave 20% of the initial token allocations, which again was like around 4 billion plus tokens, 20% to retroactive public goods, 17% to sugar zaddies, aka investors. And I'm reading this from their deck, so that's not me saying that. Core contributors, user airdrops, and ecosystem funds. To date, the most I've seen from them giving out tokens is like some of the games that they launched on top of OP to get people to use it. But I'd be curious to know if you know of any other places they've been like actively giving out tokens for people to start using their chain versus like the other L2s that they're obviously competing against.
Yeah, Optimism gives out grants to people that are building. They, you know, they did OP Summer, which was sort of like liquidity mining. Now they have sort of changed it to just like sort of bespoke ad hoc, I think, token or voting approved, or I'm not exactly sure, but I do know people still get tokens and use them as incentives. Yeah, I mean, Optimism is, you know, they're a little bit behind Arbitrum, so they needed to do this, and, you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
it seems to be working. On the subject of Base, I guess we could segue into FriendTech, which we talked about last week. Yeah. So I was surprised by the amount of blowback I got, is like as if I was like shilling FriendTech and as if it was just a Ponzi. When I think if you go listen to anything I said or read anything that I wrote, it's like a lot more nuanced than that. Like,
did people misconstrue you on the internet?
Yeah, I know. Oh, crazy,
my,
huh?
My goodness.
Not going to be able to go to sleep tonight. I do not deny that there's a speculative element of it. There are a lot of people like security law violation jokes, but like that's nonsense, because like if you just go sign up for the app, it creates a token for you, but you don't know that unless you happen to have seen that elsewhere, right? So like the whole Howey law, I mean, multiple prongs are broken. Now, the thing that they did this week is they added JPEGs, and basically a lot of OnlyFans creators. we'll keep it family friendly there. OnlyFans creators have joined the site. Although I've seen something suggest that most of those OnlyFans creators are actually fake OnlyFans people, and they're all some scammer that's imitating these OnlyFans creators, and it's all just a scam, basically. I don't know. I can't attest to that at all. So
that's interesting. How would you find that out, though?
They basically take somebody's name and they create a a fake Twitter account, and then they sign up to only to Frentech using the fake Twitter account, and nobody does the research. Like, it goes on there and type it. They might be smart and get a bunch of fake accounts to sign up, right? Because you can buy followers. And so if you buy a certain number of followers, then the bots will automatically pump up your shares.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, as I said last time, these bots make it basically impossible for you to make money on Frentech. And that's a huge problem that I think they need to fix. But this week they added JPEGs. And so now, you know, look, this space loves overpriced JPEGs and gambling and speculating on overpriced JPEGs. So on some hand, it was the obvious thing to do in one of the Frentech chats that I'm in. Maybe it was my own.
Yeah.
You know, sense to add JPEGs, it's the obvious thing to do. I actually don't know if it's the smart thing to do. It's a, you know, I don't know, turning Frentech into some OnlyFans. It's managed to get more speculative element to come to it. So, and yeah, they are making a crazy, like, they're making a gold mine right now, like literally millions of dollars on the fees that are going for, like, I think they're making over $1 million a week right now. So they're making a ton on it, but in the long run, I don't think that, like, to me, that's not the category defining, right? Like, they could be, like, as you said last week, they could be Cameo for crypto or something like that, or they could define their own category by doing something completely different.
Yeah.
I don't know. JPEGs becoming OnlyFans doesn't super resonate with me or make me think that that will do it, but we'll see. I mean, you know, it's only been a week, and I am sure that other people will be out there doing similar things, but differently, right? Traversing the idea maze differently. And I'm excited to see some of that, because even Frentech is not a new idea. Like, it remixes some things on Ethereum that are not new at all. Sort of these, you know, token gating, attention, you know, buying, bonding curves.
It just, like, hit all the right things time, are not right? New.
Yeah.
It just hit, like, at the bottom of a bear market. Like, so no one cares about anything right now. And they came out with something kind of slick and fun for group chats of people who, like, obviously aren't leaving at this point. Like, the people who are sticking around aren't leaving anytime soon. And then they added, like, a tokenization bar on a different app. Like, I get it.
Well, and it's, I think it's underrated, the idea that it's kind of a cool UX. Like, the way they do it is you sign up and they create and it's cheap, right? Because it's on Base. So you sign up and it creates an account for you that lives on your phone. And then it's like, you just sign, you know, it's like a Web2 experience. And you can export the key that they create for you if you want, and you want to own that. So I think that is an underrated element of its success, where, like, people are acting like it's just some Ponzi. And I think that's completely unfair to the developers. You know, there are crypto Twitter influencers out there shilling, and I know that that's not necessarily the most reputable element of crypto all the time. I do think that some of, like, while there might be some element of retail that's getting scammed, I think most of the people know that they're just gambling on this stuff, right? And so it's a lot different in category and kind than Luna, as well as scale, right? Luna was literally, you know, Doquan and all of the people around that, trading firms, investors, who, you know,
a little bit different.
Scammed retail out, like, telling them that it was, like, you know, they should put their life savings on there. This is, like, obviously, you know, you're gambling. It's relatively small amounts of money, and I don't know. Yeah,
I mean, I like that we had Austin Griffith on the show basically around the time Frentech started blowing up, because he was talking about that too, right? He's talking about how he wanted to make fun applications, throw them on chain, and see what happened with them. And for him personally, he was a little afraid that some of this stuff would blow up because he wouldn't know what would happen on the regulatory side. But in this case, like, I guess Racer is like, hey, it's cool. Like, I'm making a lot of money on this. I don't want to opine on, like, the legal side of it. I think it's cool that it's taken off and people are interested in it. Some of the other cool stuff I've seen on top of it is the fact that, like, it's another gated community for building content. And I've already seen some people putting out like interesting research on there, sending it to like selective group chats, where they'll like publish early into a group chat of people who like hold their shares, and then they'll publish later, like maybe like the finalized draft. And that's like an interesting way of giving like gated access to people who like care about your research and probably have the ability to make money on top of your research. And that's just like one thing that's popped up in the near term, you know? That's
and good. Can maybe give good feedback as well before you make it
exactly
a completely wider audience. Although all my group chats are dead. I'm in a few, you know, the ones I've bought
for,
and they're all dead. I'm the only one that does any chatting.
That's you.
Yeah.
That is your fault.
Anyway, Base is, you know, but Frentech has been the big launch for Base. There's actually something, I think it launched today, which was City Bikes. So it's a fake, like it's not City Bike or whatever. But basically the idea is if you're in New York, you can scan any City Bike in New York. And then it's a contest of all the bikes, of all the City Bikes that you scan. They get made NFTs on Base. It's a parody site, but they're like the NFTs are real. And if you scan the NFT, the bike that somebody else has scanned, you scan them and it's you take their money or like it's kind of crazy. I don't know. I'm not entirely sure I understand it, but it seems like a fun little, again, like I'm sure there was a speculative element to it, just like with Frentech. I didn't really get a chance to. Like I'm not in New York, and so I can't play with it, and so I didn't go too deep into it. But it seems like if you were in New York, it would be a fun little scavenger hunt. It's relatively low stakes, you know. That if you want to, you know, go out and play a game, it's amusing. Yeah. And actually, like I think that is an underlying thing that I sort of think, which is people sometimes talk about Web3 games as if you take some normal game that exists and you add NFTs to it and it's a Web3 game. I actually think it's like something more like Frentech is a Web3 game where it is, or the City Bike thing where it's just, it's novel and it is something that you can't, I mean, I don't know, maybe you could do sort of in Web2, but I don't know. It seems novel to me and, you know, it's cool to embrace the idea of just doing things like completely different.
Definitely agree with you. Let's go to the last part. I want to get your hot takes on this. I'm excited for it. Or maybe not. Maybe it's sad. But Lido surpassed the 30-31% benchmark that a lot of people have been talking about. And this goes back to like the consensus of Ethereum, how safe it is for a certain entity to have stake. And Lido passed that this week, according to some numbers looking at Dune Analytics, in this case for me right now. This has been like warned about. Danny Ryan has written a lot about it. You've tweeted a lot about it. What is your take on Lido surpassing that benchmark and not a lot of reaction so far from the Ethereum ecosystem that I can see?
I think it's going to start happening is my take. There is Lido has a lot of vested interests. There are, you know, by default, like nobody is doing I would, outside of maybe my tweeting right now. And I think the fact that they're getting up there and the number is continuing to grow, I think it's going to start becoming a big contentious point. It, you know, I would have liked to have solved it by now. It's certainly not optimal. What I think is a strange move on their part is that sort of like if nothing happens, they, you know, they're already their percent has been going up, and by doing nothing they could maybe not inspire people to fight back. But then they've been like, you know, they went on Bankful and had a big, you know, episode about how it was great that Lido had a huge chunk of Ethereum stake, which is totally not true. And then they have somebody on staff that published a piece about how it was great that Lido had a big chunk, and I think that's a strategic mistake. I think it's going to wake up the Ethereum community. And I think we will fight back, and it's not okay that like Lido attempts to become the on-chain governance system. If you wanted that, you should move to some zombie chain like Tezos or something. The idea of Ethereum governance is it's the same off-chain, rough consensus, nodes first as Bitcoin. And yeah, I think we're going to fight back, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's been surprising enough to see more people talk about this. You had a tweet about it for Bitcoin a little bit, talking about Bitcoin mining pools, which, like, laying that aside, I think if this was to happen in Bitcoin land, there'd definitely be a lot of chatter and talk. And I feel like in the past in Ethereum circles, there has been a lot of discussion if there's been the possibility for this, right? Like, there was a lot of thought and preparation went into consensus for Ethereum over, like, multiple different upgrades over the last 5 years when going into, like, the launch of ETH2 and the Beacon Chain. And now we're here, and they just kind of, like, walked past that number. I had one tweet from John Chaub, which was sort of interesting, and wanted to get your take on it. He did a whole thread on what's happening with Lido right now, and he referenced a Vitalik quote. Don't think it was a tweet itself. They said, Lido having 45% of Ethereum is significantly less bad than Coinbase having 45% of Ethereum, which is less bad than Justin Sun having 45% of Ethereum. Any thoughts on that?
I hadn't seen that until now. I feel like that is the lowest bar of success, right? I mean, sure, that is factually true, but that's like saying very, very, very little, you know, because Lido is a coalition that has a voting with the token. It's a coalition of states. And so it's not, it is one entity, but it's made up of like multiple staking pools. And then it has a token. So, you know, it's not a, it's different than maybe Coinbase, which is like, you know, jurisdiction in the US and possibly, you know, gets told by Biden to do something, right? Or like Justin Sun, who's Justin Sun. So, you know, the fact that he is, I'd say that's, you know, I don't know. I think he's like taking that out of context if he's saying that's like a positive thing that Vitalik said in any way.
Just as John Sharp's point here, he's essentially saying that in this whole thread, and I'll link in today's show notes for people who are interested, he's talking about like the credible commitment to doing something about someone breaking past that threshold. And the fact that nothing has happened, there has been no follow-up on a credible commitment to slashing or hurting anyone who comes over that 30% threshold, or even like deterring them some sort of way, speaks to the fact that there's like a weakness in that sort of part of Ethereum governance. And then to the last part with a quote tweet saying like, maybe
sounds like he is daring us to fight back. So game on.
It's fair.
I think that's a very strange tweet, but game on, let's go. I mean, I think you're going to see the Ethereum community start to rally. And if that's the way Lido wants to play it, of telling people that it's like they're good for Ethereum by them controlling stuff, like it's going to, my take is, not end well for them. Bit of self-limited. And that would be okay for them if they'd self-limited. They have decided that they're going to try to justify insane valuations by trying to control Ethereum governance, and I don't think that's going to work and might be quite counterproductive to the value of their governance token.
Fair. I don't have much of an opinion on that, but we can end it there. I'm at Stanford Blockchain Conference this week, so we'll probably do a follow-up news show of sorts maybe early next week. The conference runs Monday through Wednesday, so I'm excited to go and watch some talks. But from Evan and I, we hope you have a great weekend. Evan, any final words? Any words of wisdom?
Well, I am a decentralization maximalist, so I think Bitcoin should have more diversity in its mining pools, which is 2/3 control, 69% right now. I think Ethereum needs to get better about Lido. And I think this is literally the reason why we are in this space. And so like Bitcoiners could criticize me sometimes for maybe being sensationalist about the tweet about their mining pools. But like, I would retort that they should be happy that I'm, you know, helping them fight centralization, even if I'm annoying, which I mean, I am trying to annoy them, so I can't argue with that. But the same is true for Lido. If Bitcoiners want to make a big deal about Lido, like it wouldn't bother me that much. I think anything that makes Ethereum more decentralized is a win. So
Love it.
love
Okay.
decentralized stuff.
Thanks for listening. Go check out the Amin podcast if you did not yet. It's a good one. See you guys next week.